Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
Thanks, Eddie. This is episode 50. We had a lovely weekend at Old Deer Park last weekend. The sun was shining and about 100 members of the club were playing touch rugby in mixed teams on pitch one. Before the day started, we all stood on the first team pitch and marked the passing of our president, John Dawes, with a minute's applause. Post the rugby, we all then ensured that the Old Deer Park bar was kept busy for most of the evening. Our guest this week is someone that embodies what London Welsh is about. He has been at the club for over 25 years, coaching his children and others in the minis, stepping up to be youth chairman for a number of years, and then working across the amateur board and the pro board, representing the best interests of the club. He has been integral to the helping launch the hub, and someone who has taken great pride in seeing his boys play for the club since Project Reset. A truly lovely gentleman with a great family, our guest this week is Paul Brown. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by London Welsh Developments. London Welsh Developments offer the entire range of services for all your home needs, from plumbing, electrical, joinery, and building and maintenance. Their many years of experience building all forms of extensions and conversions, the odd new build, and some bespoke garden rooms and home offices. You will clearly see the attention to detail and understanding of your home that is difficult to match. They really do care and want the best for your home with no stone left unturned. For more information, contact London Welsh Developments on 0208 335 9123 or email on info@lwdltd.co.uk, London Welsh Developments. Welcome to the pod, former board director and youth chairman, Paul Brown. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm very well. It's a sunny day and I'm chatting to a London Welsh legend like yourself. So what can go wrong?
Well, I'm in illustrious company. Very honoured to be asked. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Look, it's been a difficult weekend for the London Welsh supporters. We've lost a true icon, a rugby pioneer, with the sad news of John Dawes passing away. What are your memories of John?
I think memories, I mean, the man was just an absolute icon. I mean, I started playing schoolboy stuff in 67 and you watched him all the way through. And, you know, you come back to the pagoda room, he'd be there, gloom is like, talk to everybody, talk to the lads. And I think John Taylor's comment saying he's going to be missed on every level, what he achieved, his rugby legacy, and was a wonderful friend. And he is London Welsh, so we've got to keep the legacy going.
No, certainly, yeah. I mean, reading a lot of the tributes in the papers, the people talking about him, I think, you know, people tended to, I wouldn't say underestimate him, but to forget about his achievements, because he's not as a Gareth Edwards or someone like that, but he achieved so much, didn't he? And really absolutely. Played so many games for our club.
And the whole thing about total rugby, and if you look at what's happening with sort of Wayne Pivac's side at the moment, where forwards and to play with backs, that Tipperick's kick going forward, for example, led to the try. We're going back to that, and I think that's the future. Really innovative, brilliant thinker, and massively modest. Lovely man, and a huge loss.
No, certainly is, and I'm hoping to catch up with Michael and Rodri when the time is right, just to talk about, you know, the legacy of the dad. But, you know, it's obviously must be still difficult for them at the moment. So look, you've got a big family like myself, you know, so how have the family been, locked up? I've heard that this little bird tells me that you've become grandparents recently.
Yeah, Bethan. Yeah. Our little granddaughter born five weeks ago. That's from Will, my eldest. And so we saw her over the weekend, and little Bethan's lovely, really gorgeous. Nothing like your granddaughter smiling up at you. So that was great. But now the family's all been good. And, you know, Morgan's been playing a little bit of rugby. I think he bashed into you and knocked a couple of your ribs to one side.
Yeah, I think
I took out one of your sons.
Yeah, I think it took me about 6 weeks to recover from being bashed into by Morgan. But yeah, I'm all okay now. I hope he is, yeah.
He's fine. No worries. He's no worries.
And so are all the kids following the nest now, and you're home alone, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, not quite. I mean, they've all moved on. I mean, Eldest is buying a house in South Ealing. Morgan and his girlfriend Steph live over in Twickenham. Owen, who has had a huge number of injuries, and both Owen and Morgan played first 15. He's living in Addis Ababa these days, working for the Foreign Office. And Krista's with the Met Police, living in North London. So all doing well.
Wow. And you're a lawyer. So has this lockdown affected your work life in any way? Or are you able to work from home fairly effectively?
Yeah, able to work from home very effectively. It's actually been really helpful because I've done a lot more international clients. I've been doing a lot with Indian law firms and some Middle Eastern ones, some African ones. So, yeah, no, it's been good. And we've got my mother-in-law staying with us as well, who is great and looking after her during lockdown.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You know all the mother-in-law sort of stories coming out.
Oh, she's great. No, she's always on my side. It's wonderful.
You're saying that because she's bound to listen to this, isn't she? So, hello, yeah, Paul Brown's mother-in-law. Look, you and I have got a couple of things in common. We have four children who have all played for London Welsh Minis in youth, and we've both been youth chairman. Look at that, eh? But you've played for the club. You've played for the club, and I'm yet to do that. So I will have to. I need to correct that at some point in my London Welsh story. But no, it's great. It's great that you're on this. So I'm going to talk about your rugby journey, really, because and also your volunteering and your board roles in the club, that sort of thing. So when did you start playing rugby, Paul? And where was that?
Well, gosh, that was I got a scholarship down in Brighton, and so we went there, and about the age of 18, 1967. And I mean, I just donkeyed around the pitch, really. There's a sort of very skinny number eight. So in the 70s, I was running around doing that. And obviously, Mervyn Davis was a complete hero. And one of the massive thrills, huge honour, was when I received an award from Mervyn Davis on his last appearance at Old Deer Park, which was, I mean, how many people get the chance to meet their boyhood hero? It's just fantastic.
And did you, are you Welsh, Paul? Sorry, pardon my ignorance here. So did you go from South Wales to college, or?
Oh, it's always more complicated. My mother's side of the family, originally from a small place called Llansamon in North Wales. In fact, my grandmother's era, they didn't speak English at all. And then, I was actually born in London, and then we went down to Brighton. And my wife Nikki's family are all from Margam and Pitalbot.
Okay. So when you were playing for Brighton College, did you have to then, were you a member of a club at all during your sort of youth days as well, or just school?
Oh, just school at that stage, and just donking around on the pitch. Mind you, the older I get, the faster I was, definitely.
But Brighton College is quite it's quite a big. Big rugby school, because Marcus Smith went from Brighton College straight to Quinn's first team, didn't he?
No, he did. And I mean, they've got their, when I was there, frankly, it was one of the better third-rate private schools. And but the rugby side now is very good. I've got a young nephew there who's at the Quinn's Academy, age 17, and pushing for international honours, hopefully, fingers crossed. So that'll be another Brown coming through, because we had obviously Will and my daughter as well.
Have you told Kai? Well, make sure you tell Kai, though. You can come and train with us in the summer for the pre-season if he's 17.
He's 6 foot seven at 17.
Oh, my God. So is he second row then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very, very talented.
Wow. Well, keep an eye out for that then. That's pretty good. So, and then obviously post-Brighton, you went to Oxford University. Did you you carry on your rugby playing? Because obviously each college have aside, did you play for which college did you go to?
I went to Trinity. I just played there. I mean, again, nothing like as talented as our kids' rugby. So just played college rugby, went on a few tours, etc. And no, it's all good fun.
Hey, and, Paul, it's about enjoyment, Paul. It's not about exactly. It's about 0.05% of players get to play professional rugby, and the rest is all about enjoyment. So if you went to Trinity College, enjoyed your rugby, and made loads of mates, went on tours. Whereabouts you go on tour then?
Well, we went over to Cambridge, which was a particularly alcoholic tour. But you're absolutely right about the thing about enjoyment. And I mean, I remember there's one minis tournament when there, Cliff Morgan, again, meeting a sort of complete hero. And went was chatting with Cliff Morgan, he said, look, I've got four children playing today. And he said, yes, but are they enjoying it? and that focus on enjoying your rugby. That is the key thing. That is the absolutely key thing.
Well, you obviously enjoyed rugby because you carried on playing post university. So where did you where did you play after you left university?
Well, I went off to Bahrain in the Middle East. You play on sand there, and at that stage I was a back row forward or a lock forward, and you know, playing on sand is no fun. So I stopped playing rugby, went into water skiing, which was good fun. So kept reasonably fit there, but then came back to UK in 87 and went on from there, where I met, which is met Nicky up in Manchester.
And so when did you come to London Welsh then? When did you move to Richmond, and when did London Welsh start becoming part of your life?
Sure. Well, we moved to Richmond after we got married in 1987, and then, you know, obviously having our kids, and when they were old enough, said, right, you know, we'll take the kids down. And we'd had dinner with a friend who's a primary school teacher, and she said to me, look, the kids that tend not to get into trouble, that tend not to stray off the beaten track, are the ones who are focusing on the Saturday's game or Sunday's game. We said, right, definitely, you know, down to London Welsh. And started with Will when he was seven, so that would be in 95. Morgan started the year after that with Seb Scottney. And wow. I can still remember, Julian Davis, who again still is involved with the club, very much so, calling me up and saying, Will's been selected for London Welsh. You feel huge pride. I mean, one of the biggest names in world rugby. And, you know, and I remember his first try was against Richmond, which actually he ended up playing for later on. But
So even at that age, you'd have like selection meetings or because obviously, more or less, we nowadays everyone plays, right? So there's enough sides, enough tournaments where you don't have to select players, and everyone plays because obviously you want to grow the game and involve everyone. Mm. But it was in those days it might be different, where you have to be selected on ability, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's on the numbers. I think Julian said, well, Will's a nutter, I'm going to select him.
Well, that's, well, you're his dad, you can call him what you want. So I've got a quote from Morgan, actually, your second child, about by your rugby career. It was cut short by a severe lack of talent, he says. That's not very nice, is it?
And lack of fitness, to be fair, as well. You know, no, I remember that. I mean, the last game played, which was 1999, just, I would say, age 40 for the Ockies Vets. And we played rugby in the morning and then went to watch England Wales in the afternoon at Wembley with the Scott Gibbs try. And I was playing, very unfit, with my brother-in-law, who's an Australian as well. And Nikki was on the touchline and she was saying, look, you haven't played for a while. You're not that fit. Hang back, you know, just hang back. So I was sort of trotting around the pitch thinking, yeah, it's going all right, it's going okay. And I got this voice from the touchline, my wife, Nikki, say, you don't need to hang back that far. And so,
but were your children watching you play? Because imagine if at 40, you'd have been, your children were old enough to come and watch you play. And so who was around the Ockies at that time? Was Jorsey playing still, or...?
Jorsey was playing where the club was founded. I mean, I think, you know, no, and it was Jorsey was there. There was Jeff Malvisi, who injured himself in the first 2 minutes, and he was our only good player. It was good. And one of the real thrills was my Christmas present one year. William Morgan and Owen, my three sons, all played rugby for London Welsh in the same shirt at the same time, and it was that was something special, something really special to see that.
So when was that then? When would that have been, when all three of them would have played?
That would have been, I think, well, it was for the Ockies. So it would have been about 10 years ago, maybe. It was a Christmas game. It was just a friendly. And just lovely to see. I've got to confess, I think I've told anyone about this, I had my kit on underneath, just if I had the chance to come on to a cameo.
That's what dreams are made of. And if it's a friendly, we can make, you know, but I suppose you'd have been, 10 years ago, you'd have been 50, I suppose. And then, we've had people, you know, Marcus is still playing, Danny played into his 50s, do you know what I mean? So, But did you get many games for the Ockies then over the years? Did you,
just a few when I was sort of was running out on that one. But it was a lovely way to finish playing on the pitch. you know, the that ground, and just a huge honour, huge honour.
Oh yeah, and obviously to see three of your children play in the same side as well, that's just fantastic. That.
Absolutely. And my daughter played with the minis, coached by Seb Scottney. Unfortunately, at that age, from the age of 11, there really wasn't a pathway for girls. And one of the things I'm really pleased about in the club, that we've got girls going all the way through and really driving through. She then took up rowing and captained Wales at under 18 for the rowing.
So there's a lot of sporting prowess with your children. Where on earth does that come from?
It skipped a generation with me and Nikki. I mean, my father-in-law was a sprinter for Glamorgan, and my mother-in-law, who's intensely competitive at all sports, played very, very good hockey. My mum played lacrosse, which makes it terrifying, as a goalkeeper, which is terrifying. So no, it skipped a generation. The grandparents had lots of sporting ability, and somehow it got passed on to the kids. But I think a lot of it was just dedication and bravery. I mean, I see some of the injuries that Owen came back from. I mean, one bit he smashed his leg, and he phoned us up, and we were actually watching a game of rugby down here, and he was up in Leeds at the time, and he phoned up and said, I think I've broken my leg. Nicky said, oh, are you sure? How do you know? He said, well, I can see a bit of bone coming out of the skin. So Nicky bombed up to Leeds where he was at uni, and he had this big Ilazarov frame, big wire frame holding his leg together. But when he was down at London Welsh, John Taylor came over to him and said, look, I had something like that round my chin and head, and this is what it felt like. So you've got lads playing for the side who get injured and come through, and you've got complete legends who will come up to, you know, kids and say, you know, I had that. I got over it, came back to rugby. And it's a core part of London Welsh. You've got the dynasties, like the Great Doors dynasties. You've got the great players, but people are coming back and giving back to the club.
No, certainly. I think more so now with a community club as well. You get that real Definitely. Sense of community at the club. Look, and you're a big part of that, because when did you start getting to coaching the minis? I know how hard it is when you have four children and when you're involved as a volunteer to keep an eye on everything and dedicating yourself to coaching, but you've done that. So when did you start getting involved in coaching? Did Seb give you a whistle, or did someone else get you involved?
Well, no, it was in Morgan's year. So Morgan was in the under sevens, and I think it was, and went off to watch him in an away minis fixture. And there was only me and Jeff Malvisi there. So we said, oh, we better look after the side. And so we just started coaching them. And, just went on from there. So, you know, did a couple of the qualifications, just about kept that going. And then I dropped down to look after Owen's year to work with Owen on that when he started playing. And just kept on going. It's you get into the club and you get into the family of the club, and it's just a huge warm feeling being part of it.
I think the more you're involved, you're right, you know, the more you give, the more you get back, in a way, isn't it? And do you know what I mean? So, and that just, and you get to meet so many fabulous people, you know from all walks Absolutely. Of life, and hear their stories. And you must have coached some players over the years then, that, you know, who've gone on to achieve certain things in rugby, yeah, or even in life, maybe.
Yeah, they were some really great players. I mean, you know, I'm not sure how much I've managed to teach them or anything, but they had their own ability. And people like Tom Hughes went on to play Wales Rugby League. Conan Osborne, a great lad. And, you know, he was at an interesting stage when he could have gone a number of different directions. His brother had some issues. And he ended up captaining Jamaica. And I think he's got a record number of caps for Jamaica Sevens. In Morgan's year, there were people like Ollie Lindsay Haig, as he is now. He was Ollie Llewellyn. We used to look after him. Frankly, our only coaching there was get the ball to Ollie and score.
Was he a class apart, though, Paul? Was he a class apart?
Fantastic.
Was he?
Class apart. I mean, it just, you know, you give him the ball, he'd jump up, sidestep, and he'd be through. Absolutely fantastic. And you've got other people like Leo Johnson. Leo was born with only one working hand, and super guy, brave as a blinking lion. And one of the top memories I've got is of him taking the ball in the line and going through and scoring a try. He's only got one working hand, and that spirit, I mean, it took him on to the Paralympics. Brilliant side of things. But you get to, you know, other thing lads coming through, like, Dominic Childs, saw him at the club on Saturday. And you see players from the age of 6, 7, go all the way through. And if we can help them become really good men and women, I think we've, you know, done all right. No. And it's been good seeing other players like Jonah Holmes, who's friend of Owen's, get into the full national side.
Yeah, it's fantastic, that, isn't it? Really fantastic. Because he played for us as a scrum half on loan for a bit, didn't he? When we were in the pro team. And then he's maybe he can come back after he's finished with Gwent Dragons and come and play for us again. That'd be lovely, wouldn't it?
Well, that would be good. Well, Owen did have a hand. He was actually watching him play at Twickenham with Gatland's daughter when he got the call. So, done well. Done brilliantly. It's great seeing players come through.
No, I love that. We want as many of our minis and youth going to play senior rugby, whether that's first, second or third, as possibly can. Now, a lot of your boys took their rugby quite seriously when it comes to youth. How did you find balancing school rugby and club rugby? Was that quite a challenge for the Brown boys?
It's a hugely complex because for example, we had Will, who was playing school rugby at Hampton, club rugby at London Welsh, club rugby at Newport Gwent Dragons under 16s, under 18s. All three of them played Welsh Excels. And I would put a sort of spreadsheet together so that we would try and work out who would go where. You know, Nikki used to drive down to colleague Gwentusk for training. So a couple of hours driving there, a couple of hours driving back for, you know, an hour and a half training. And getting the balance right. But I mean, Nikki took a huge amount of that in terms of driving down and so forth. But yes, it's about balancing and making sure they're enjoying it. And because that is the core of it. You shouldn't be pushing kids who are too hard if they don't want to do it. This is about the kids enjoying it and growing and getting not just the sporting side, but that sense of being in a team, making friends who are going to be friends for life. I mean, you've got Morgan, you know, Morgan has been playing rugby with Alex Laybourne since they were, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, something like that. You've got these lads going all the way through. And then, you know, as with Morgan, come back to do some coaching.
Yeah, no, that's great. But was there ever a pull from the schools for them not to play club rugby? Because we get that happens a bit more nowadays, I think. But, you know, because obviously it's quite a physical sport, and for them to play Saturday morning school, Sunday morning club, you know, it happens a lot in Wales still, but less so in England now, I'd say.
Every now and again. I mean, it's just always a balance. I mean, for example, Owen made the first 15 in St. Benedict's very early and went on tour to Japan aged, I think, 16 for the first team. Did astonishing role. You know, Will first 15 Hampton, similar to Morgan. You've just got to get the balance right. And, you know, you talk to the school and you do what's best for the kids. It's really important that they don't overplay and either stop enjoying themselves or get injured. And I think one of the key sort of bits on that were things like the Welsh Exiles, which Terwyn has been, you know, astonishingly fantastic over the years. And I remember going up to Mill Hill with the things, and the kids were giving advice on education, on nutrition, on training, the whole thing, and brilliant advice as well. I mean, so for example, one bit, you know, Will at that stage was playing 7, and they looked at Will and said, no, you're with the backs. And he moved it to winger, and that actually kicked off his rugby career, even though he was playing county 7. Actually, he did a lot better on the wing.
Cool. So, yeah, because obviously Welsh Exiles now is at London Welsh, isn't it, now? I think so. Well, hasn't happened because of the pandemic for 12 months. But what about some of the tours? When you were youth chair, did you take some of the year groups on tour? Things like, you know, or you would go on tour with your boys' years, I suppose, wouldn't you?
With the boys' years, I mean, just incredibly lucky. Some great places like Ystrad Manach and so forth. We've always had a great welcome. Down in West Wales, and with watching Jorsey do an assault course with the boys, and I still have no idea how I managed to squeeze through one particular tunnel full of water. At the end of that, though, kids were so muddy, we actually hosed them down. And then with Morgan's group, I mean, incredible fundraising that they used to do. People used to go and work at Glastonbury to raise money. Barcelona, which was astonishing. And North Italy, where we ended up going around these incredible clubs. And I remember, I mean, one evening, a tiny little village club called Monte Bologna, which we went to. And this actually possibly is the worst pre-match talk I've ever heard, because Jeff Malvisi saw them and they were all in different shirts, different socks and shorts. He said, look, he says, if we have guests here, they've got a couple of girls in the centre. I'm not sure this is going to, you know, go easy. We were 20 points down after 10 minutes. They were absolutely brilliant. And we fought back to a draw. And in the evening, we couldn't speak Italian. They couldn't speak English. There was one of the best rugby evenings ever. You know, lots of pasta for the kids. All our kids had a T-shirt, which they had to find their opposing number and give them a London Welsh T-shirt. They were giving awards to the kids, making up awards, giving them, and it was just absolutely fantastic. And I'd always promised Nikki when we got married that I'd take her on to Venice. I don't think the under-14 rugby tour was quite the thing she had in mind, but we did get to Venice on that.
She would enjoy herself anyway, wouldn't she? With the group of tourists. It's who you're with. That's the main thing, isn't it? Always, isn't it?
Absolutely. Always.
And you talk about the boys going to Japan on one of their school tours. So where did Morgan and where did Will go on their school tours? Because they go to quite far-flung places, some of these private schools, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They went, the biggest one, I suppose, was South Africa. And we went down there and we built a holiday around it. So Nikki, myself, Owen and Krista would basically go and watch a game and then go off and climb Table Mountain and so forth. And what was great was we were playing, you know, high schools in Cape Town. We ended up with this unbelievably tough Durban side who were just huge and incredibly talented. And these South African school games, they can have, you know, a couple of thousand people watching the game. They're just enormous. But a great experience.
Now, we were lucky enough at my eldest boy's year group to play a South African team. When they came over to play at WASP, we did like a triangular tournament. Mm. It was a different level. It really was a different level. They were over for like a 10-day tour of the UK. They'd been to Wales and other places in England. But yeah, it was a great experience for them to play with. But they were very, very, very talented. So, but then obviously you were youth chairman. So who was helping you when you were youth chairman then, as some of the coaches or other volunteers in that year group?
Yeah. Well, loads of them. I took over from Stephen Cole, who'd done a fantastic job there. But there were loads of people like sort of Phil Parker, you know, Mike Talbot was coming up. And I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think was a good call was getting Mike involved as a youth chairman, because he's just done an amazing job for the club, you know, on the operational side, keeping the shop running, keeping everything running beautifully. And, he's just, you know, an outstanding job, and he was clearly a real talent coming through on the youth side. And so I asked him if he'd take over for me as youth chairman when I moved on, and luckily he said yes, and he's been doing brilliant stuff for the club ever since.
So I wouldn't say unsung hero is not fair, but he just does all the work a lot of people don't want to do, and he just goes about it in his own way. And yeah, the more you get to know Mike Talbot, the more you really appreciate and value him. I think he's fantastic what he does. Oh,
absolutely. Fantastic. Really is. Huge, huge asset.
So once your boys had left London Welsh, you know, graduated from the youth, you know, where did that take them? Because I know Will played for Richmond in National One. Mm-hmm. Did they all play like university rugby as well then?
Yeah, well, if I go down in age, Will got a place at Oxford and did well there. Got his blue on the wing against Cambridge. Saw him score a try at Twickenham Rugby Stadium for combined Oxford and Cambridge side, which is great stuff. And obviously, he'd been before Newport Dragons under 16, under 18. Sadly, I mean, the national side weren't going to pick him. But then he got picked for England under 18 on that side, which was a very proud moment.
Yeah.
It's the only time I've ever heard my wife sing God Save the Queen, before or since, when someone's going to come. She would absolutely never do that otherwise. And then Morgan went down to Cardiff and captained the under 21s with, and I was there in the park watching the, you know, the the kicking off bit when at the end of the game when we were drawing with Lloydie, not quite kicking it as well as he normally does.
Yeah.
But some great lads in that side, and it's really good to see the lads coming, you know, from Cardiff and coming up to London Welsh. And I think this is central for the club going forward, well, that, that side of things. And then Owen went up to Leeds, you know, played for the university, and then first smashed his leg, came back to rugby, went out to Australia on exchange, playing at Newcastle in New South Wales, played against an Islander side, and absolutely had his jawbone taken apart, wired together. Luckily, Newcastle in New South Wales, if you want a jaw set, it is the best place in the world. They have a but I mean, his bravery coming back. In fact, all my boys and girls' bravery and determination. I mean, I'm so proud of them all. So proud of them.
I'm sure you are, and I'm sure you are. Look, you know, I think so. Is it so? Once your children have left home and gone to university, is that when you decided to have a more active role within the club, really? Because you know, from being a youth chairman, you then became a member on the amateur board first, and then.
Yeah, no, I was on the amateur first on the amateur board as being part of the youth side, and. The kids are still very much playing. That was when 2009-ish, when we had the first administration, when this, you know, complete chance and Neil Hollingshead came in and offered a lot of money that didn't really exist.
And we've heard a lot about him, Paul, haven't we?
Yeah, I tell you. But I mean, all credit to, particularly to Danny Griffiths and Ian Horgan, because Ian Horgan was crucial in the meeting saying, we've got to establish the amateur club, so that if this ever happens again, we will survive as a club, because we'd looked into the chasm. And Danny and Ian did an amazing job at setting us up on the amateur side so that we would survive whatever happened in the future. And that really is a sort of kickoff for a lot of the things that we now have. And huge credit to Hawks and Danny on that one, because they really drove it through and made it happen.
So that's about 08-09. So you're a member of the sort of London Welsh board, but were you invited onto the main board when we were a pro club?
Yeah, I joined the main board in 2012, and because I thought, you know, the club is at a real crossroads. You know, do we stay in what's now the Championship? Do we go further? Do we go down? Or how does it work? Because it was a real issue. So I said to John Taylor, look, if I can help, I'm very happy to. And was asked by Kelvin to join the board at the same time as Bevan. And joined in 2012. And of course, then we got promotion, which nobody really expected. And I've got to say, one of the great sights. I remember the next day we had a board meeting. And Millsy's coming in his shorts and flip-flops with the championship trophy swinging under one arm. And, I mean, Millsy is a great character, great person in the club.
So what was your role within the board then? Because, I can imagine, because obviously Kelvin was trying to step away for a long time due to his wife's ill health. Blending was new to the club. Probably his rugby knowledge not the best, but that's just my personal opinion. I'm not being criticizing anyone. So and obviously going to the Premiership, you know, there's been lots of challenges then around players, finances, that sort of thing. So what were the sort of key things you had to try and achieve as a board then?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first bit was, you know, and I think both of Kelvin and Bleth, and very different characters. And Pat, by the way, was absolutely fantastic all the way through. You know, massive loss and lovely, lovely person. But both passionate about London Welsh, put a lot of time, passion, energy and frankly, money in. And, you know, back in sort of 2012, the question was, well, we're losing £1.5 million a year, approximately. If we go up, maybe we'll get the sponsors will come through and we can take it to the next level. So we decided to go for it. And unfortunately, the sponsors never really came in to the level that we wanted it. And you know, so we got to relegated, obviously, in that first season. But and I hadn't realised it was Tom May's try.
I know, yeah. We still like him though. He's all right.
We still like him a lot. Yeah. He's a great guy. But I hadn't realised it was him who scored that one, and so we, you know, went down, and then completely unexpectedly, we ended up beating Bristol 27-8. Home, and then that 21-20 win away in driving rain, and we got promoted again, and you know, decided to go for it. We'd had all the issues about where do we play, and there's a lot of discussion about that, because we knew that we couldn't stay at Old Deer Park and be in the Premiership, and we looked at a number of different options. We had Mark Evans, who was previously at Harlequins, giving us some advice there. And we tried Oxford, didn't work. That didn't really work out in terms of the local support. I think it's a shame that we didn't manage to negotiate something with Iffley Road, with the university. But they were asking too much, frankly, for what we could afford.
We were tied to the Kassam for 3 years, weren't we? Was it a get out clause every year or not? Because we had to play. When we relegated from the Premiership, we had to play in the Championship for one season at the Kassam, because once he wanted to grow our supporter base as well. But that was challenging in Oxford. I thought it was the right thing to do for the club at the time, go to try and cultivate a support, because there was no rugby clubs around there. It worked in that first season up to a point. We had some big crowds. There were 10,000 in some games. Second season didn't seem to work, did it?
Absolutely. It's a great shame. But there was some amazing rugby. I mean, that, frankly, I'm still annoyed at the fact that the referee blew up the game when we were about to beat Saracens. And some amazing moments. I mean,
hey, Paul, he is now the best referee in the Northern Hemisphere. It's Luke Pearce, right? Yeah. And honestly,
I know.
But look, you know, as players make mistakes, refs make mistakes as well, don't they?
We all make mistakes, but I think, I mean, you know, one of the best tries I've ever seen was that, again, against Saracens, you know, high ball, Seb Jewell, who actually played with Elders at Hampton, catches the ball right to tackle, out to Gavin Henson, and Gavin Henson runs diagonally, and he just looks like he's throwing the ball over his left shoulder. And I had to, you know, I watched it hundreds of times to see when he looked, and there's the back three coming up at speed on the left, and they just cut Saracens two pieces. Just an astonishing try.
Gavin Henson looks like he's just gliding, doesn't he? I think Seb Steckman was playing that game, and he was at the ground on Saturday having a few beers with his mates.
I missed him.
It was great to see him, actually. He's playing for Rosslyn Park with the London Welsh vets of Nick Scott and Alex Davis and things like that. So who knows?
Brilliant.
They could be back. But those board meetings, you know, the Kelvin and Bledin dynamic, I'm not looking for gossip here, Paul, just an appreciation of sort of what went on and some of the challenges at that time were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, both very different people, both massively passionate for the club and all really wanting the best for the club. And I think the big issue was the fact that the money never came in. I mean, we had people who were promising. We had the famous Trevor, who never quite came up with the money. And the thing is, the cost of being a Premiership club is massive. And you look at the numbers and you look at how much all the Premiership clubs, pretty well all, not quite all, are losing. And as an economic model, it's really hard. I mean, similarly, frankly, Championship as a professional model doesn't work. The clubs are losing money hand over fist, apart from, I suspect, Richmond, who've stayed with the amateur ethos, having gone through the same sort of administration that we went through. And you've got to have incredibly deep pockets to support that sort of thing. And therefore, if that's not there, and Kelvin put a fortune into the club, Bledin put a fortune into the club, the money never came, didn't look as it was coming through. So with Trevor, I mean, it felt like a slow motion car crash. And so, you know, I resigned in May 2015. I remember talking to you in the bar, because you said, so you've resigned. Why is that? Of course, I couldn't say, well, because I'm really worried about the financial position. Because you can't do that. You can't, you know, you've got responsibilities on that side of things. And of course, then we ended up in December 2016 in liquidation. And I mean, by that stage, I was the second biggest shareholder in the club, after Kelvin, of course. And the worst day by a long, long way in the club was signing that thing which liquidated the club. I mean, it felt terrible. It felt like, I felt ashamed because, you know, we hadn't made it work. Nobody's fault, you know, it's these things happen. Everyone took decisions which felt right at the time, but that was a bad day.
Look, I'm sure it's a very upsetting moment in your life when you look back at it, but you know, obviously you've done what you can, done your best. You know, we've all heard from Kelvin in the podcast how much he put into the club, and there was just no new investment coming. So you have to be sustainable, and we weren't. You know, I think it may be different if we were able to do it at the end of a season and cut our cloth accordingly. But look, you know, that's history. Yeah. So we're just trying to understand what went on, I suppose. And all that Trevor thing, it just it was like 12 or 18 months of talking to him. It just did you ever think he was going to come through though, Paul? When you were there, or you know. Was he another charlatan like Neil Hollingshead or something? Well, sorry, he's not a crook. I don't want to say Trevor's a crook. That's an awful thing to say. But did you think he was ever coming through?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I didn't know the guy well enough. His advisors were hard-nosed people. I mean, Hollingshead forged documents. Yeah. I mean, you know, that was the allegedly forged documents. but he was, you know.
You are listening to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of internet issues there, Paul. But look, we're back now. And I think, you know, so we're talking about Trevor, I suppose. You said you didn't know him that well. And look, when you're desperate for a saviour, then you're looking in different areas for that saviour. And then maybe he was just never there.
Yeah, exactly. And well, we knew on the side that because Danny's and Haug's efforts in the past, you know, the club would keep on going. But we didn't know whether, you know, would anyone turn up to watch, because at the level we were going to be going down to, one man and a dog used to turn up. But what was brilliant was that I think the club got back its soul, and the community side, the supporters, everybody rallied around. You still got the sort of, you know, same faces that, you know, I've known for, well over 20 years, 25, 26 years. Still going along, still coming up, still drinking in the bar. And I think a huge credit, particularly to people like Gwyn, Gareth Haskins, that is, Bryn, who did an amazing job, and particularly Gwyn Williams, who, I mean, I cannot praise the man enough, because what Gwyn did for the club, in terms of taking it out from the situation where we were clinging on by our fingernails and to rebuild it, and to rebuilding it in a way that's true to the club, to our ethos, and to build a club that's going to look after, you know, not just our children, but our grandchildren, and hopefully our great-grandchildren. You know, when your kids have their kids, and hopefully my little Bethan from Wheel will be coming down in about 6 or 7 years' time. You know, it's about keeping the club going and handing over better. And Gwyn particularly, I think, has, we could not have had a better chairman and better leader for the club at that really quite dark time.
But look, you know, so for the club being in liquidation December 16 to restart September 17 with Morgan playing in front of big crowds, you know, and as you say, us getting the soul back, you know, the community club, you know, one club ethos, you know, maybe you have to go, you know, life's about ups and downs, and we've had, you know, we've had some great times in the Premiership with the club, but I feel we've got this, as you say, the soul of the club back. The club's a great place, playing at Old Deer Park, and we're sustainable, and we've got some great players, good coaching leadership, and an engaged board, you know, and, you know, it's, and so, you know, things like that happen, don't they, sometimes?
Well, excellent. And I think, you know, I think, I mean, Gwyn was, you know, talking, he'd been chatting to John Dawes And John Dawes said, "Listen, we've had always been a roller coaster in the club, and this is just a new chapter going forward." And when you got sort of all-time greats like John Dawes saying that, you realise actually this, whilst it feels a bit dark at the moment, actually you can move it forward and open up the new chapter.
But as a parent, you know, having seen like Morgan play for the Woman and his dogs, you know, the pro Pokemon, and then to see him, you know, represent the club you love.
Oh.
In front of those crowds, what, you know, I can't imagine what it'd be like as a parent to see that. Oh. It'd be so emotional, I would be.
Enormously emotional. I mean, to see him running out on that pitch where all the greats have played, and Morgan played for the first 15. Owen played for the first 15. Picked up a number of bumps and scratches along the way. I'm hugely proud. But, you know, and it's fantastic to see your kids, you know, excelling and doing well, but not for yourself, it's for the kids. You know, my daughter representing Wales, you know, William representing England, getting a blue, Morgan, Owen, all playing Welsh exiles, counties, and then getting to London Welsh, first 15. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And that group of lads in that season began the journey, combined with the vision of the board at that stage, led by Gwyn, and moved it on. But also huge credit to people like Kai and Sonny Parker, who stayed with the club and talked it through. Although Mog was telling me about, you know, Sonny Parker, who's very quietly spoken, as we know, he'd give this big, long team talk, and a jumbo jet would be going overhead, and people said, right, you've all got that? And I go, we've missed that completely. And you've got bizarre moments like there, that 0-0 draw in the rain in East London. And I've never been as wet in my life. And that we were camped on their line. And Kai was saying, look, we're going to do another scrum. We're going to push them over. And I think it's the only 0-0 draw I've ever seen in rugby.
I think I remember seeing London Welsh. I think it was a New Year's Eve game. We were 0-0 against Moseley, what, you know, over Christmas period for 60 minutes, and then it's something like a 11-8 or something like that in the end. But it was like, well, could they go 0-0 to 80 minutes? But look, you always had challenges trying to watch your children play. Because I remember speaking to you once, I think you're watching one half in Richmond and then coming to London Welsh to watch the second half, or the other way around. You're watching the first half at London Welsh and then going to watch Will at Richmond.
Well, and also my nephew Edward, who, you know, he's just come back from Australia, in fact, and playing for as well. So you basically go from pitch to pitch sometimes. And Will, after uni, stayed with his mates and his director of rugby at university and went down to Richmond, which is great there. Super, fantastic club there. And looking at what they were doing, which is trying to help people with careers. And I said to the pro club board, we should try to do something similar. But what has been fantastic is people like Pete Laybourne and Hayden building the hub up so that it becomes a reality. Because it's not just having the idea, it's actually doing the hard yards and building that up. Pete Laybourne did a brilliant job despite all sorts of, you know, obviously his wife was very ill and finally passed away, sadly. Hayden's been doing a brilliant job. And now with the link up with Cardiff Met, and hopefully some more link ups are coming through in the near future. And if we can get people playing for the club who have been playing together at uni and carrying that through, that's got to be the future.
Yeah, all those, you know, if we have links with all the Welsh universities and all those people who play rugby at any level who come to they come to work in London like they used to back in the day, they come to London and play for us. You know, that's all we can ask for, whether that's performance or social. You know, that's the main thing. So you've been quite involved in the Careers Hub. What's your involvement been like, and what have you got out of it personally?
Well, I'm getting more involved in that again now, and obviously been helping, doing a little bit of stuff. But the main work has been from Hayden, Pete and Kai taking that forward, coaching players. And it's great that we're seeing players now being helped in their careers, because it's not just about, I mean, it is obviously about the club, it's also about the kids, helping them, because this lockdown period has been really, really hard for a lot of young kids. It's difficult to find jobs. A lot of the jobs being lost has been from, you know, from that age group. And to be honest, I think people my age have had it relatively easy. You know, we've got, you know, spacious houses, it's relatively easy work as opposed to people, kids in there who are 18, 19, 20. And I think, you know, for a club in the future, but also to help those kids get on the ladder, get their careers sorted, and at the same time, continue playing with their mates on the rugby pitch. It's absolutely, absolutely crucially important.
No, I agree with that. That's probably one of the most important things that we've done at the club is to set up the careers. And actually, we've launched our Colts Academy for our youth age groups, and I'm working with Hayden how we can use the hub to inspire 16, 17, 18-year-old boys about university choice, life choices, and just to demonstrate to them we're more than a rugby club.
Absolutely. And I think that's just crucial because in the London Welsh family, but also when you start coaching at London Welsh, you realise that there's some kids who are from very wealthy backgrounds and some kids who are got really hard backgrounds. I remember one winger we had and came from a really tough background. His, I think, one elder brother was in prison. Mother lived behind an iron door because there was domestic abuse going on in the family. Couldn't get him to the game. And one of us would take turns, Pete Label, myself, the others, getting him to training. And we live in a really leafy and wealthy area of London, but there are a lot of kids who really need help keeping them on the right track. And if we can help those kids get a sense of purpose, of team, and talking about, you know, being that Sunday's game or Saturday's tour game or whatever it is really important. And you build also that support network of kids around them too. So it's not just about the rugby, it's about the family and supporting. And I think one of the amazing things about our club is the way that that support is all the way through. I mean, so for example, when Morgan got even more concussed than normal, and we happened to be away, Nicky and I, on holiday on that weekend, and he thought we were at home and we weren't going around. And I had, you know, calls from Danny, from Gwyn, saying, "Look, I think he needs to really think about whether this is the time to hang up his boots." The care, looking after people. You know, we've had situations where there've been, you know, tragedies in people's lives, and the club comes round people and wraps them in a warm blanket and looks after them because they're family. And I think it's a bigger thing than just the sport. It is a family, and people look after each other because, look, in any life, there's ups and there's downs, and it's a roller coaster. And I'm, you know, unbelievably proud of all my kids and all the kids that I've been involved with over the years. But it's about not just the good times and them doing very well. It's helping kids who maybe, you know, not great in the rugby sort of, you know, hierarchy at their school, helping them achieve something and getting a sense of pride and ownership and taking forward. And I think that's really important. And if we can help those kids when they go into the jobs market, get their CVs in order, work out what they really want to do, what they're going to find really fulfilling, and we can't get them a job, clearly, but we can help them, give them the best chance. And giving those kids, those lads, those men, the best chance, it makes us the club we are.
Oh, definitely. Wise words, Paul. Look, I just want to ask you finally, really, and I appreciate your time. What does being part of London Welsh mean to you and your family?
It's our other family, isn't it? It's a place where you can, you know where you're belonging, and you know where you can walk in, and there's going to be friends there. There's going to be people. I mean, people I've known for years and years. People my boys have played rugby with. You know, it's a place where it's part of the family, and it's a way beyond just a sport. It's the really deep link. It's family.
Ah, lovely words, Paul. Look, and you've been a big part of our journey. You know, bringing your children here, coaching here, youth chairman, board member, careers hub volunteer. You know, you're deeply involved with our club, and long may that continue. And look, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it, and look forward to having a pint with you back at the club sometime.
Looking forward to that very much, and thank you very much. I'm honoured to be part of this podcast. I look at some of the names and you think, my goodness me, huge names, and huge names to come as well. And I'm honoured to be part of the whole thing. Thank you very much. It's been a privilege.
Good stuff.